your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are shifting our focus a little bit more into the resource sector now as I am chatting with Jayant Bhandari. He is an advisor to a number of institutional investors that are focused in the resource sector. Jayant is also, I think, very well known to some of our longer time listeners. Now, Jayant, I want to take a step back with you and look kind of big picture at the resource sector and some of the global factors that you see driving different metals. Look, precious metals, it's been a good year for the precious metals, but they are still in this correction. We're all waiting for a bottom to be formed. And from a lot of the people that I respect and technicians that I respect that analyze the sector, it really does seem like we're going to be looking to next year for when the next run higher can come. But we might be starting to see a nice bottom being formed here. Jayant, give us a little rundown, though, of what you are watching globally for the resource sector and what you think it needs to be noted by investors.
Well, Corey, we have to remember that China consumes more than 50% of virtually every commodity. And Chinese economy is back in shape. It's in a growth form again. The fact remains that across the board, commodities have done reasonably well over the year. Despite a fall in March, commodity prices are not only back, they are back in a stronger way. I was talking with a garments manufacturing company based in China a couple of days back, and they told me that the textile exports from China have actually increased about 35% year on year. Although, of course, textile includes export of masks. But Chinese economy has done very well. It's growing at about 4.9% in Q3. The exports from China in H1 grew by 4.6%. And in October, the exports from China grew by 11.4%. So Chinese economy seems to be doing very well. China has imposed restrictions, unofficial restrictions on imports from Australia and New Zealand. They are finding COVID in meat imports from New Zealand and Australia. They are claiming that coal produced by Australia is not meeting environmental standards, which is hilarious complaint to make, actually. But that said, it seems that it's hurting China more than it's hurting Australia. And China will probably have to pull back from it. Coking coal is not easy for China to procure. If they don't procure it from Australia, which actually has a sort of monopoly from the Chinese point of view, China has to import it from USA, Canada, or Mongolia, which are distant from the transportation point of view, which means that coking prices have fallen outside China, but they have increased inside China. And Chinese steel manufacturers are suffering, while steel manufacturers outside China are benefiting hugely from this. So this cannot continue for China if China wants to stay competitive. And in terms of thermal coal, something very interesting has happened, which is that, ironically, it might be benefiting Australia. By restricting imports of thermal coal, China is having to import it from faraway places and otherwise expensive places, which means thermal coal prices have gone up, which is actually benefiting Australia. So you will continue to hear about this unofficial trade war between China and Australia. The fact remains that Australia will emerge hurt from it. From a government of Australia's website, you can see that new projects coming online are investing about 30% more in capex in commodity businesses than it was the case last year. So I think Australia is doing very well. Chinese product consumption and growth is back in shape. You will hear all these noise about trade war between Australia and China, but I think it will get washed away eventually because China will unnecessarily suffer if they don't undo their restrictions. Now, China, of course, hasn't imposed any restrictions on import of iron ore and LNG from Australia because China cannot do without Australia in terms of those two commodities. So again, overall, I think the future looks quite good in terms of increasing consumption of commodities to me. And Australia should actually benefit from all this. And as a result, companies in Australia that have suffered, commodity companies that have suffered because of trade war between Australia and China might revert back to their normal.
So do you think, at least in the short term, that this trade war between China and Australia could result in any price fluctuations in any of the other metals, maybe slightly bigger resource markets?
No, it can't, because China is indeed trying to restrict import of copper concentrate and other commodities from Australia. But the problem is that, as with thermal coal, these commodities are very fungible. If you don't import it from Australia, China has to import it from somewhere else, and then Australia can supply the same commodities, same concentrates and same commodities to some other countries. And that's what you can see in thermal coal. Import of thermal coal by South Korea, Japan has increased quite nicely, imports from Australia. So while China is restricting it, Australia is able to find different clients, while those people who were buying it from other countries, those countries that were supplying to Japan and Korea can now supply to China. So China is only increasing the cost of doing business rather than actually restricting import of commodities.
So, Giant, what about some of the other commodity sectors then in terms of either precious metals or base metals? As I mentioned, precious metals are continuing in this correction, but base metals, just this week, copper had a breakout to levels that we hadn't seen since 2014. Are there any areas, any certain commodity sectors that you think provide some good investment opportunities right now?
I think commodity sectors are well priced for now. I would not fall prey to what people have been claiming about new green technology commodities. I think that is a difficult area. The problem is that while Biden and many of the other governments might be interested in making their countries so-called green, they actually cannot make their countries green by imposing green technology from top down. Their problem is that post-COVID, they will have a huge shortage of cash. And when reality sinks in, they will realize that they have to work towards improving the productivities of their economies rather than imposing what sounds good, which is the green technology. Green technology has to improve organically. Green technology has done very well. In many areas, sun-based and wind-based energy has done very well. But this has to improve organically. This has to be productive. This has to be economical before it gets traction in the society. Otherwise, you would be destroying economic value. And we are in no position to do destroy economic value, particularly when free checks have to go to welfare recipients and unemployed people.
So even the recent investment flows into these clean energies like solar and other clean energy ETFs, you don't think that's a sustainable trend, it sounds like.
I would be very careful about it. I would not invest in those things based on this euphoria to do with AOC kind of people's marketed formula for how we can improve green technology. Any bullishness that has arrived because of those things must disappear with time, and people will be at a loss. But at the same time, Corey, that does not mean that you should be discouraged from investing in green-based technology, as long as you understand the fundamentals of those companies and believe that those companies would benefit going forward, irrespective of what Biden and AOC managed to do to the economy. Because if those tech companies are productive. They are, if they can generate value without government subsidies, then why not? They will continue to be a beneficiary. And if they do benefit from any government subsidies when Biden comes to, if and when Biden comes to power, then that will be extra cream on the top of the cake.
Okay. Let's get also a comment on precious metals, because a couple answers ago, you even said that you think a lot of metal sectors are priced fairly right now. When it comes to the precious metals, gold is about over $200 off of its highs. Silver, you can say, has been performing a bit better during this correction. And same with some of the gold stocks. They were selling off a couple weeks ago. Some of the ones, at least in my portfolio, really seem like they have started to bottom here. How are you playing this pullback in precious metals? And do you think that it'll take to next year? Or what do you think will drive the prices?
Well, I am certainly optimistic about the precious metals. And precious metals are a different kind of commodities. They are a function of what's happening in the economies around the world. And we do see increase in political uncertainty around the world. The wars will go up going forward. There will be a lot of problems in the third world countries. As I just mentioned to you earlier, that Bangladesh and India are suffering hugely from COVID. And that is the same case with a lot of third world countries. So as a result, because of the social problems in those countries, which will obviously result from economic problems created by COVID, consumption of gold by savers will increase. You can actually see that in the performance of gold. Now, gold bugs can start to worry about a fall of gold by 5% or so. But even currencies fall by 5%. US dollar has fallen by more than 5% in terms of Chinese yuan this year. So what's the big deal about a change of 5% in any commodity pricing, particularly when it has gone up very significantly over the last 1 year? So I wouldn't worry much about that 5% fall in gold price. In fact, that shows how good the support level of gold price is. It does fall by $50 or $100, and then it reverts back to its normal $1,900 per ounce gold. So I think at $1,800 to $1,900, it's well supported. I would not be surprised if there is increased buying going forward, just because risk in the economy and in the society will go up over the next 1 year.
So does that mean that you're starting to buy some shares right now, maybe playing the so-called tax loss selling at the end of the year and playing for the fact that gold has corrected now for about 4 months and it is due for some sort of a rebound?
Oh, absolutely. I am always invested anyway, Corey, just because there's always an opportunity somewhere, particularly in smaller companies, because people tend to get bored of smaller companies and they forget about them. So there's always an opportunity lurking somewhere. So if you keep your eyes open and look around, you will find good companies irrespective of what's happening in the economy or what's happening in the market. And that is why I do pay attention to what's happening in the economy, but a lot of people get so bogged down in what's happening in the economy that they go into a sort of coma when it comes to investing in isolated companies, because they think what will happen to the economy will hurt their individual investments as well, which is not necessarily the case. You can always find companies that will survive, that will and can survive any economic hardship in the society.
Giant, do you care to share any companies that you are watching that you think has some nice catalysts or that are just quite frankly undervalued right now?
There are always some companies. One is TMAC Resources. The ticker is TMR. It's trading at less than $1.20. And there is a merger that might happen with Shandong Gold, a Chinese government-owned company. But Government of Canada is, of course, not giving permission for that merger to go ahead. But if this merger were to go ahead, TMAC shareholders would get $1.75 per share. My hope is that Canadian government declines to let this merger happen, because there is indeed an issue to do with security of Canada. However, if the government of Canada declines to give permission to the merger, my guess is that TMAC resources will actually go back to 175 anyway, because gold price has improved substantially from the time that the merger was announced. Now, TMAC share price has fallen because investors have become bored. They know that it might take another 6 months before a decision comes out. But hey, if I can make 50% by waiting on an investment for 6 months, I have absolutely no problems doing it. At least the support level is very good in TMAC resources. So I'm very happy buying it, accumulating between $1.10 and $1.20.
All right, Giant, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you for your time today. Some interesting comments looking outside just U.S.-specific drivers and outside of simply just the precious metals. We do still need to focus so much on what's going on with China, but China and the trade war with Australia causing some price movements in metals that some people might not be paying attention to, or resources that people might not be paying attention to. Giant, thanks for your time again. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you very much, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.